The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians can do nothing but talk about Jesus and the Bible. Well, my friend, if you've been following this show, you know that's simply not true. Our theme is Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture, but we do talk about politics and pop culture a lot. We even have a film critic who joins us every few months, my good friend Mark Booby, and he is not here with us today, but I'll tell you who is here with us, one of our other rotating co-hosts, and when he comes on, we could talk about anything, but as it happens, he said he did want to talk about movies today. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
Hey, Bob. Great to be on the show. And yeah, I think we can have a lot of fun tonight. This won't be maybe as serious as some of our other shows.
It's very seldom serious when it's you and I, Jim.
Well, you know, you gotta
We may start with a serious topic, but... Yeah,
and I know we're going to talk about movies tonight, but I have to get something out of the way. I don't know if you've seen the breaking news, but Nancy Pelosi is now going to publish her memoirs. And
Oh my gosh, are there advanced copies on Amazon? I must order one.
Yeah. Well, she told the publisher, just publish it, and then you can read it and find out what's in it later.
You beat me to the punch. I was going to say, do we have to buy it to find out what's in it? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. I just wanted to kind of, you know, because she is a master legislator, as she has told us. So.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. When she talks, I'm just thinking glittering jewel of colossal ignorance.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I just had to get that one in because I'm as big a fan as you are of, I let her stay in power. Just keep undermining that party. Unbelievable.
I'll tell you, though, one thing the Democrats do know how to do is to be united, unlike our wussy Republicans that are abandoning us at the flank here with that no vote on health care. John McCain, the maverick. You know, I'm thinking, Mr. McCain, you could be no more of a maverick than to actually keep your campaign promises. That would be unique in Washington today.
I think of another line from a movie. You keep using that word. I do not think that word means what you think it means. Oh, my goodness. Well, so here we are. Yeah, I've been following a lot of your posts on those things, and I love to have a contrarian point of view and disagree and debate and get involved in the polemic, but most of the time I agree with you on that stuff, and I just think it's both sides of the aisle are in a really sad state.
Unfortunately, there's not much the country can do but sit around and twiddle their thumbs because we put them in power. Our authority ends at the voting booth, but if they're not going to do what they promised to do, or if they do what they promised to do and then some judge overturns it anyway, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Well, I've got a friend, he lives out there in San Diego where you are, and he gets on a thing sometimes. We talk about term limitations, and he says term limitations are in the booth. Vote them out. And we need a serious campaign. I mean, I know the problem is I won't vote for most of the liberal lunatics, but quit voting in the primaries for the incumbent Republicans. Vote them all out.
Yeah.
If they won't limit themselves, then the American people need to start doing that. But I just don't know if we have what it takes to get that done.
Yeah, I don't know. I am a big believer in term limits. I think every politician, including the Supreme Court, should do a single short term so that they're never motivated to get reelected and make a career out of it. Speaking of term limits, we have somebody at this station whose term is up, although he is leaving voluntarily because he's moving. And that's our board op, Nick. And I wanted to give you a chance to say goodbye to him over the air.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, man, it's been a pleasure working with you. You're a fellow music trivia buff, and you've given me much delight over the years with this show. And so I'm going to miss you. But I know the person taking over for you is going to do a great job.
Yes, he is.
But it will be incumbent upon him to come up with some good music trivia questions.
I think Tim is up to that. He seems to be a movie. I don't know about music buff, but he certainly seems to be a movie buff so far.
He has some music chops. From what I haven't picked his brain as much as I'd like, but the little he's shown, he seems to be up for the occasion.
And Jim, we immortalized Nick before he left. He is now a permanent part of one of our commercials.
For better,
we're
going
to play it. We're going to play it today. We'll see if you can. Since you're good at spotting the music, we'll see if you can spot the Nick voice in the commercial later on in the show.
Which is like music.
Which is like music, anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do a show sometime on music. In pop culture.
That would be fun.
Oh, if you do that,
we could bring Nick back for that.
We'll bring him in.
Because I won't have nearly as much to say about that one. You guys leave me in the tracks with the music. So. Yeah.
Well, Jim, thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate it. I'm going to miss you as well. I always knew that whenever I heard your voice or heard that you were on the air, first off, I knew it was going to be an easy day from a board ops perspective. Good. And secondly, I knew it was going to be interesting, and I knew you're always so nice to me. And as a board op who doesn't always get that luxury, that really means a lot. Just that alone, that you're nice to us, and that really sometimes makes our day. So I really appreciate that.
I'm taking notes here. Be nice to board op.
Yeah. Be kind to board ops. I'm going to make it a T-shirt.
Okay.
Thank
All
you,
right,
Jim.
Man. Okay. Well, that was good.
Well, now you did have some films you wanted to talk about today, as if I understood.
Yeah, and first off, if there's some ground rules, what we wanted to talk about was Christology or types of Christ in the film. So, first of all, we'll eliminate the films that were actually based on the life of Jesus.
Most of which were pretty bad, I should say.
But you and I
liked The Robe. I liked Ben-Hur. There were not a whole lot of good movies made about Christ.
No, Ben-Hur was my all-time favorite. In fact, for a long time, it was just my favorite movie, period. And it's still way up there on the list.
It's on my top 10 list of top 10 best movies of all time.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. And I know you must, like I have, the complete unedited version, which takes 4-something hours to watch, but it's worth doing.
You mean Jesus of Nazareth? Is that what you're talking about?
No, Ben-Hur.
Oh, no, you're still on Ben-Hur. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was almost a four-hour movie, but I was thinking they had like a 5-6-hour miniseries based on Jesus called Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That one wasn't one of your favorites, I take?
Well, I'm like you. I think most of them, I look with a pretty critical eye because I've studied the Gospels for getting close to 50 years now, 49 years, and so I'm a little bit particular about how those things are interpreted or translated, though I did love the Ben-Hur. I don't know if you remember a film, Johnny Cash, I think, did the soundtrack. It's called
The Gospel Road. That was not bad, and he sang a lot. But you know, the older movies like Ben-Hur, like The Robe, they were smart enough to be about the people Jesus influenced, and you only saw Jesus quickly and from the backside.
Yeah.
Because usually when somebody has portrayed him, like in the greatest story ever told, movies like that, they portray him so bigger than life. Okay, I get it. Jesus is God incarnate. Yeah. But the whole idea behind the incarnation is that God was coming down to live and model the life of a very ordinary human being.
Yes,
and I would have liked it much better if they portrayed him more ordinary, which I thought they came closer to in the miniseries Jesus of Nazareth. That's why I would give it a little more of a nod. But I do think the ones who just didn't even bother portraying Jesus at all, like in Ben-Hur, I think they were smarter, actually.
I love the way they did it. And in The Gospel Road, the reason I mentioned it, there's one scene where Jesus laughs. And I love that because
The disciples lifted him up in the air, didn't they?
Yeah.
They pick him right up in the air and they were clowning around.
Fun. And I don't have a problem imagining Jesus laughing. In fact, I think sometimes the things he said, there were a few people laughing under their breath because he was making sport of the Pharisees.
Oh, he said humorous things, but because of the culture difference, we don't always catch his sense of humor.
We don't understand straining in a gnat and swallowing a camel and those kind of things.
Exactly, so what that would have really looked like in those days.
Okay. So, but we're not going to talk about those films, and I also think we probably need to eliminate things like Godspell, because that was too obvious.
I did like Godspell, I should say, though, and I liked it better than Jesus Christ Superstar. Jesus Christ Superstar was written by somebody that didn't have a clue who Jesus was. Fantastic music, rockin' fantastic music. I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber, but they did not have a clue who the real Jesus was.
I had the first copy of that in San Diego. At the time, I worked in a record store right across the footbridge from San Diego State, and the label promoter guy would come in with demos to give to the stores, and so I had a copy of that before anybody, and I loved it. But it was intended to be sacrilegious. But here's the cool thing about Superstar: many of the original cast members got saved.
And well, if I was playing the part of Jesus in a movie, I'd start looking out for my own soul a little bit.
Well,
I'd be afraid lightning was going to strike me. I imagine it was quite a sobering experience just to be in that role.
Yeah. Well, Ben Vereen, who played Judas on Broadway, he got saved. Leslie and I, a few years back, saw a stage production, and they brought back Teddy Neely, who was an original, and they changed the ending from the original thing. The original just ends with Jesus dead, and in this one it was symbolic, but they had, you know, he's on the cross, and then there's this kind of surrealistic thing, and the cross begins to go up into the air as in an ascension. And it was, to me, what they were, you know, the point they were getting across was pretty clear, that the death was not the end. And
they tried that here at Christian Community Theater as well, and Andrew Lloyd Webber got wind of it and told them they were not allowed to show the resurrection. I'll tell you how they got around that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound more beautiful.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Well, Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting the show with me today from Texas, my good friend, Jim Barrier.
And don't hold that against me, folks.
Hey, yeah, well, I won't get into any more of this stuff about California seceding from the Union or anything like that.
We did a whole show on that, didn't we?
It'll never happen. The Democratic Party would never win an election again without California. It's not going to happen. I was talking before the break, though, as we continue talking about these movies that we're not going to talk about. Another movie that we're talking about, not talking about, is Jesus Christ Superstar. CCT, the biggest community theater in the country that started here in El Cajon. You've probably seen some of their productions. They would always do it up on Mount Helix over the years.
Yeah.
When they did Jesus Christ Superstar, they got a lot of flack, if I'm understanding the story correctly, from the Christian community because it has such a lame portrayal of Jesus. He seems to be confused. He doesn't seem to know who he is. There's a line in the script where people say, "Heal me." And he says, "Heal yourselves." And he's, anyway, Paul Russell made it public that, well, our version's going to be different because he's going to rise from the dead and we've made some changes. So Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice got wind of this.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're a popular, well-known theater company. They said, tell us about some of these changes you're going to make. And they told them absolutely not. Now, artistically, I am on the side of the playwright. I don't like it when directors make changes. I understood why Paul Russell wanted to do that. The way they got around it, and I did go to see it, is they had Christ rise from the dead during the curtain call so that it wasn't part of the show. Here's the thing, though. It was so much not the Jesus of the Bible that it didn't matter that he rose from the dead.
Yeah.
It didn't fit. It was like putting peanut butter on steak, although I guess some people might like that. The Chinese have done peanut sauce for years. Anyway, all right. Okay. So we talked about a lot of movies that we're not going to talk about. Let's move on to the ones that we are going to talk about.
Okay. Now, as I started writing down movies I was familiar with, I noticed a pattern that it was very predominant in fantasy sci-fi movies. And I think that's because it's an easy genre to get a message across and not get in trouble. And, for instance, Rod Serling was a genius at writing about social issues, but disguising them as, you know, sci-fi fantasy stories. And so he couldn't get in trouble because he was speaking in another language. Roddenberry did the same thing.
I was going to say, Gene Roddenberry did the same thing with the 1960s version of Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and which I will mention that. We're talking movies, but my favorite episode of the original cast TV show was an episode called Bread and Circuses.
Oh, where they went back to a parallel Rome that lasted into the 20th century.
20th century Rome,
And, or as Shatner would say it, something parallel.
Yes. He would say it like that.
Very good. Well, that's two bad William Shatner impersonations in a row, and you got them both double back on the Bob Siegel Show.
We're going to lose ratings here. But it was a great one because there was this group of insurgents that would not go along with the empire, and they were sun worshippers. But they were pacifists. And
we're thinking they mean the sun in the sky throughout the episode.
Yeah. And Uhura says, "Don't you get it? It was the Son of God." And Kirk, the last line says, "Wouldn't it be fascinating to go back and see it all again?"
Yeah. And by the time Kirk says that, you had enough time to run the whole episode again.
Yeah, the credits are rolling.
Well, of course, their version was that Christ spread this message about brotherhood. Christ spread a message that we need to be forgiven of our sins. Yeah. And true brotherhood could be accomplished after that. But yeah, it was a very interesting episode. I enjoyed it. Yeah, yeah.
So let's just go through the list, and I want you to, you know, jump in with whatever ones you have. You probably have a lot of the same ones, but the year that I was born, 1951, one of the most important sci-fi films ever made, black and white film, the original, not the remake, with Keanu, is The Day the Earth Stood Still.
One of the best sci-fis ever made. Special effects hold up today because they were smart enough to shoot it in black and white. And I got to tell you something, Jim, and anybody can go to my website and read this. When I heard they were making a remake, I refused to see it. I went on the internet, and on my blog, I wrote a review of it. I said, I didn't see it. I don't have to see it. In the original version, the aliens came to warn us to stop war. This is present-day Hollywood. It will be about global warming and climate change. I don't even need to see it. There will also be somebody in there. You had a single mother in the first movie that got along great with her kid in present-day Hollywood. Little Junior's upset because she never goes to his ball games. They're estranged. And of course, I just told my reader, you just tell me whether I called it. I still haven't seen the movie to this day. And that was my review of the remake because the original was such a good classic movie.
And you have your finger on the pulse of wise, well-thinking, common sense Americans.
But you're right. There was all kinds of great imagery of Christ in that original version.
Well, the guy comes, you know, he comes to Earth with this message that they can be saved from the doom that is impending. And then there's this kind of strange otherworldly robot who I've kind of felt represented angels. And he assumes the name. He goes incognito. He assumes the name Mr. Carpenter.
Carpenter, exactly, yeah.
I love that.
And he gets shot, and the robot brings him back to life. So there's a resurrection.
And resurrection is a common theme in some of these films. But that was such a great movie, and I saw that movie as early as I was able to watch films, and it's always been one of my favorites.
I think and 2001 A Space Odyssey are two movies that stand the test of time. You could watch them today and think they were made today, not only in their intelligence, but in their visual effects.
And groundbreaking, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And now 2001, I had to read the book in order to understand the movie.
Oh, well, he made it. In fact, there's a story about the Hollywood premiere. During the intermission, Rock Hudson ran out in the lobby and said, can anybody explain to me what this thing is all about? He used more colorful language than I'm using the air with FCC regulations. But
But it was true. But the book made a lot of sense.
Well, Arthur C. Clarke wrote the book and screenplay concurrently. They actually were released together. And Clarke felt that more needed to be explained. Kubrick felt that if aliens really visited us, it would be confusing and we wouldn't understand them. And that's why he made such a confusing but classic movie. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring.
Houses burned down.
You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here's another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
images of Jesus Christ in the movies over the years, movies that were not Christian movies per se, but where you just had a Christ-type figure. I'm joined today by fellow movie buff, Jim Barrier.
And here we are. Now, I want to get one out of the way, because everything on my list really falls in the fantasy sci-fi genre, but there was a film that was also one of the great films of the 60s with Paul Newman, Cool Hand Luke.
And now that one I didn't see, so you'll have to tell me about that one, too.
Well, there's just a couple of scenes in there, and it's not a movie. It's a pretty depressing film for the most part. A couple of moments of comic relief, but George Kennedy won an Oscar for supporting actor playing Dragline. But Luke, the predominant character in the film, is kind of an anti-hero. He's kind of a loser, but he begins to win the admiration of the other inmates. They're in a road camp. They're in prison, and they go out and work on the roads during the day. And there's one scene, for entertainment, they make bets on things. And he says, I can eat 50 hard-boiled eggs. And so all of the guys in the prison are all gathered around, placing their bets on whether or not he can eat 50 hard-boiled eggs. And it takes a while, and he's getting it down, and he's got a few to go. And he finally swallows the last egg. And as soon as he eats the last hard-boiled egg, they all collect their money and run. And he's left there stretched out on a table with his feet crossed and his arms outstretched, a clear depiction of a crucifix, and as a kind of a hero, savior, messiah figure to these guys. And then at the end, the final scene is a picture they had torn into four pieces, and then they taped it back together, and it forms a cross in the middle of the picture. Now, that's real subtle, but when I saw that, to me, it was obvious. It was intentional. And so there's a film that was a serious film, not fantasy sci-fi, but I saw Christology in it quite a bit. Now, for the real good ones, and some of these are obvious, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which was made into a film.
Right, where C.S. Lewis was unabashedly putting Christian allegory in.
Yeah. It was deliberate, but boy, that's a great one. And I remember when my youngest daughter was very small, we watched an animated version of that. And at the scene at the end when they tie Aslan to the big stone thing and he's killed, she started weeping and said, "Oh no, oh no, they killed him." And then, of course, he is resurrected. And it's a powerful story. C.S. Lewis is way up on the list for me as writers, and he was
just a brilliant writer.
Yeah, and not only writing the fantasy stories and sci-fi too. You know, the Space Trilogy is a great
and then he wrote novels like The Great Divorce and The Screwtape Letters, which was absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
But he was also a great apologist and wrote, to me, Mere Christianity is still the pinnacle. If I want to give a book to an unbeliever, I'm going to give him that book.
And The Problem with Pain was another really excellent book dealing with the theme of suffering.
Yeah, so he was just, you know, he was kind of in a class by himself. But Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was very obvious. And so I think some of the stories, I think the Dune trilogy by Frank Herbert, obviously you have a messiah figure. That he is a messiah, and he's prophesied about. And Paul Atreides, that would be, or Moadib. But it's a great story, and you see a type of a Christ who comes victorious, you know, with his armies leading the charge to save Arrakis. And it's another one of those where the books were so much better. There have been two attempts on film to do that story, and they just don't cut it.
As a general rule, a book is superior to the movie. Let me ask you something, Jim, because we're talking about some films like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, written by a Christian apologist. Mm-hmm. The imagery is conscious. But then we're talking about some where we don't necessarily know, but we don't necessarily get the impression that the writers and directors were thinking about Christianity, and yet they still had a Christ figure. What is your take on that? What would be your guess as to why that image gets into so many movies, even when people aren't necessarily trying to do it deliberately?
Well, two things. One is, I think that theme rings true with people. We all want someone to save us from a world that seems to be headed for destruction. And so that's a theme that resonates in the hearts of most people. We want someone to come do what we cannot do for ourselves, which is the essence of the gospel. And so I think that that's part of the thing. It just rings true in the human spirit. And the other, I think, is because they know that it will sell. I think there are people in Hollywood, they're careful with their political correctness, but they know that Christians buy movie tickets too. So I think it's a combination of some of it just because of a very basic inherent thing in the human condition that appeals to us. And then I think sometimes they are just aware of what they're doing and throw those things in there.
And it's not just modern day films and novels. This goes back to ancient Greece. The ancient Greek plays and mythologies had figures of people that would sacrifice their life and rise from dead, to the point where some have tried to falsely accuse Christianity of borrowing from Greek mythology. Unfortunately, for that theory, the Old Testament predates Homer by quite some period of time. But I do think that since human beings are made in the image of God, it makes sense they're going to talk about even 2001, getting back to that. Now, that didn't have a Christ figure, but 2001 was based upon the theory of evolution. They were assuming, erroneously, I think, assuming that we came from apes. But in 2001, they said, well, what caused us to suddenly evolve? Could it have been some aliens that visited the world once and put up these black monoliths? And when the apes touched them, that made them become human. And then, of course, at the end of the movie, a human being evolves again. Well, you mentioned you read the novel version. Arthur C. Clarke at the beginning of the novel says, of course, this is just science fiction.
Yeah.
This is just a guess to our origin. He says, as always in life, the truth will be far more exciting than what I've speculated. And so even with all the premise of evolution, the movie's still coming along and saying life is a mystery and it couldn't have just happened by chance. Now, that might be a lame theory that it came from aliens, but to get us to say what caused this mystery of life, that's a reflection of God in that movie too. Okay, well, speaking of the Chronicles of Narnia, that's what we're playing in the background right now. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Okay, Jim, you've heard several commercials today. Which one had Nick starring in it?
Was he Darth Vader?
Oh, not Darth Vader. He's the guy that Darth Vader kills in the commercial.
Okay.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Oh,
So Nick, you've been immortalized for all time now. You may be moving, but you are now a permanent part of the Bob Siegel Show.
That's right. And that's a great segue, because I would like to talk about some of the more successful franchises. And Star Wars, I think, has a lot.
The whole dark and good side of the Force. Yeah. There's all kinds of Christian imagery in Star Wars. Although Lucas claims he got it out of Greek mysticism, which he did. Yeah. But again, you get that universal stuff going through.
I don't trust George much on anything. But,
especially when he re-edits his own movies and makes new versions of it.
To me, that's the same as colorizing a great black and white film.
My favorite line, I don't know if you ever watched Big Bang Theory, the sitcom with the nerds. And there's one where they're going to watch a new version of Star Wars on Blu-ray. And Sheldon goes, quick, before George Lucas changes it again, sit down, turn it on. So
exactly. I love that line. Yeah, I think the true fans all feel that way. So here we have this great, great saga and some great characters in there. Obi-Wan, who at one point says, strike me down and I can become far more powerful than you imagine. It's similar to, it is expedient that I go away.
Yeah.
Very similar. He lays down his life, and I thought that was a great little type. And then this is a little more subtle. In Romans 5, we have Paul talking about the first Adam and the second Adam. And in this case, the first Adam would be Darth, who failed, who fell, turned to the dark side. The second Adam, Luke, passed the test. When Yoda makes him go down into that place of temptation.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the scenes that brought Darth Vader under and turned him to the dark side when Luke was faced with them, he didn't give in.
And then ultimately at the end, he throws his lightsaber down and refuses to give in to hate. And so I think there's a great little parallel there of the first Adam and the second Adam for those theologians that are listening.
Of course, we don't know what they're going to do to Luke in the next movie. You get the impression he's going to struggle with the dark side of the Force again now.
Well, let me just give you my little input on that, because I'm troubled like many people about the trailers are always misleading with that franchise anyway. Everyone's concerned because he says it's time for the Jedi to end, and then there's this theory about the gray side. It's not the dark side.
As long as it's in the hands of the cash cow called Disney, the Jedi is never going to end.
Well, and they know what the fans want. And this is what you have to remember. I remember how devastated we were when The Empire Strikes Back revealed that Darth was Luke's dad, and we were left with this cliffhanger for 2 years.
Not as devastated as we were when they created a stupid character called Jar Jar Binks and put him in the movie. That was the real devastation.
Thank you to not say that name again while I'm on your
That's
show.
True. We should have just mercifully omitted that, shouldn't we?
But
Misa likes being on Star Wars.
What I want to remind all of the fans is that we've only seen the first of another trilogy. The second one is going to leave you in despair and doubting your faith in the Force, and the third one will redeem it.
And of course, we're not on Lucas's story anymore. His story, he even sold some story ideas to Disney, which they bought and decided not to use. So it's a whole different story.
Oh, thank the maker.
Yeah, really. He was kind of like Roddenberry. He was his greatest asset and his greatest liability to his franchise at the same time.
Always. So I say don't despair about what we see in the next installment, because it will be resolved with the third one. They know what they're doing. They know what the fans want, and they know how to make us keep buying popcorn. And so I've enjoyed it. I did like The Force Awakens. Even more than that, I liked Rogue One. I enjoyed that.
So. I actually liked Rogue One more than The Force Awakens because they were all new and fresh characters.
Yeah. So they know how to do it, and I think they've learned from some of Lucas's mistakes. I'm encouraged. I'm not worried about what's going to happen, but I would like to see Mark Hamill have some lines in the next film.
What a ripoff that was! After all that, he didn't even have him up there with top billing, starring Mark Hamill. He didn't say one word, and he was in it for what, 10 seconds, or was it 15? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very long
yeah, he panoramic. I'll bet he got paid more than the first-time actors. Yeah. Not as much as Harrison Ford, but I'll bet he got paid more than the leading lady of the film since she was a first-time.
So Star Wars has been a great one for me. I saw so much stuff in there. And, of course, the Force, the replacement for the Holy Spirit, and this, you know, kind of impersonal, it binds us together, surrounds us. But it was still... without that power, you really couldn't do battle. And I loved all the little things that to me were just analogies and types and things that I could relate to as a believer and say, you know what, that makes sense to my spiritual life. And
especially with Paul talking about our old nature battling the new nature.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's been a great franchise. We mentioned briefly the Star Trek, the TV show. There wasn't in the episode "The Wrath of Khan," the second film where
where Spock offered his life to save the ship. Yes,
there you go. And then he's resurrected.
And of course, he's resurrected in movie three. Yeah, mm-hmm.
so that's a great theme. People love that one who will, and I think in his words, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Right.
And he lays down his life and then is resurrected so they can do another sequel.
Exactly.
Coming home. So, you know, I love that.
At least when Mel Gibson had Christ die in the Passion of the Christ, they couldn't accuse him of having him come back in the next movie and resurrect as a cheap sequel, since that was part of the real story.
No, but he was at one time working on pre-production. He wanted to do a movie based on the Maccabees, which is from the apocryphal books.
That would actually be very interesting. That's a fascinating story, and I don't believe I've ever seen it dramatized. Yeah.
No, because it is his history. It just wasn't canonized history. But we move on. We move on. Another fun one, and of course, I hated when they re-edited this film, but E.T., again, here's this...
Yeah, they re-edited it by not having policemen holding guns. They were holding walkie-talkies.
I hated that.
Was that about the stupidest thing you've ever seen?
Well, no, because we opened the show talking about Pelosi. So
I stand corrected, sir. All right, hold that thought. We'll talk about E.T. wanting to go home when we come home to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area. And you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
The verdict is in on Bob Siegel's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Readers love it, and they say as much in their customer reviews. Reviews such as this one. Like the Chronicles of Narnia in the last century, the story is fun and mysterious, appropriate for adults as well as kids, and should become a classic. I won't even give any spoilers, but I will say that I couldn't put it down. It makes a point without being preachy. There are twists and turns and a great ending. Like the title object, the story challenges your thinking without leaving you in despair. This book would make an excellent Christmas gift for yourself or others, and it can be enjoyed at any time of the year. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, Jim, we're down to our last segment. Time flies when you're talking about fun movies.
Yeah, and thank you for it. We went to break. There was music from Chariots of Fire. Not an allegory, but a great film with a Christian message.
Yeah, that one with a very straightforward Christian message.
Yeah, that was a great, great film. Now, I want to talk about two of my favorite franchises in all of the fantasy sci-fi genre. The first one is one of my favorite characters or stories in from the time I was a kid, and it's a story of this strange visitor from beyond who comes with the power to do miracles and to save the world. And in the film version, we hear the voice of Marlon Brando playing Jor-El, my son.
Oh, that's right.
My
son. The first Superman. Yeah.
Yeah. And
because of their capacity for good, I have given them you, my only son.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I saw a lot of, and even in the comic books, Superman has always been a Christ type for me because he was, you know, could do the miraculous supernatural things that we cannot do. And he was always there to save us from ourselves.
And he often would be willing to sacrifice his life, even in the face of green kryptonite.
Yeah. Always. And so, I say with Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane, Superman, boy, am I glad to see you.
I used to love the comic books. Remember where Jimmy Olsen had the signal watch where he could summon Superman at any time?
Yeah.
Only Jimmy Olsen had that signal watch. I loved it.
Well, and I have the entire box set of the TV show with George Reeves, and I was just a big fan of that.
Isn't it interesting that George Reeves was on TV, and then it's a guy named Christopher Reeve for the movies?
Yeah, everybody think about that, yeah. But I loved that whole franchise, and I love the films. I haven't been real keen on the recent versions of Superman. I haven't really fallen in love with the actors or the storylines, and in fact, I don't know if it was Man of Steel or where was it, we had Kevin Spacey not playing the part of Lex Luthor, but playing the part of Gene Hackman playing Lex Luthor.
And that's true.
And he's great. Spacey's a great actor. But I loved Superman, and I see a lot of it in there. And then if we have time to wrap up one of the great franchises, the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Absolutely brilliant, and one of the best. That's on my list of all of the three. Thinking of the three of them as one movie, that's on my list of one of the top 10 movies of all time.
Yeah, and that's one of the rare cases where, for me personally, I'll just say this personally, it was easier to watch the films. I enjoyed it more than reading the books because Tolkien could be so tedious.
Oh, Tolkien will spend five pages telling you what the wall looks like. Yeah, and you want to move on to the story.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was very hard for me to read his books. I don't know if it was required, but it was kind of a cool thing to do when I was in high school to read.
Yeah, I read it in high school, which was good because when the movie came out, I didn't remember as much the changes that the movies made, which perhaps would have bothered me more. But, you know, Return of the King, there was so much camaraderie and sacrifice. Man. And when the victory was finally in and Frodo was reunited with his friends, just the emotion that you felt. It also has one of the best lines, which I think of when I look at present-day America and how we're losing our freedoms. And I sometimes think, wouldn't it have been nice to have been an adult in the 1950s instead of a little kid in the 1950s? And I remember the lines of Gandalf, it is not for us to choose the times that we were born, but to decide what to do with the times. And then I have to just say, okay, God, we're living in precarious times, but you have me here for a reason. What is it you want me to do?
Yeah, and that was one of the great lines. And it probably addressed to Frodo, who, now there's the obvious things. We have the scene in the second film when Gandalf comes riding down with the beams of light behind him.
Yeah, there was another resurrection of sorts there.
Yeah. He fell into the abyss, and then he was resurrected, Gandalf the White, and then he comes charging down on his white stallion, reminiscent of scenes from Revelation and things that we would imagine. And that was a great type. And even, I think, Aragorn, when he assumes the throne at the end, and you have this new kingdom ushered in. And he was a type, I believe, in there. But one of my favorite things, and maybe it's a little more subtle, but that whole part at the end when Frodo is going through Mordor, and he's going up the hill, and he can barely walk, and he's carrying this burden like a cross. And I see that as a like a parallel to the Via Dolorosa, as Christ had to carry the cross up the hill, but to see it through and to not back down and to fulfill his destiny. And I saw a type in Frodo of Christ in that imagery. And one of my favorite franchises. And I agree with you. I can't even pick a favorite of the three. So to me, it's just all one story rolled into one, but it took three movies to tell the story.
They didn't
do that with The Hobbit, by the way.
And it's interesting because although Tolkien was also just as committed of a Christian as C.S. Lewis, my understanding was that he wasn't necessarily as concerned about the Christian imagery. It obviously got through because, again, we're human beings, we're made in God's image. But he created a whole language, the language of Elven. And he says he wrote those books just to give his language a context. Isn't that an interesting, a reason that probably would not be of interest to anybody in the world, but he wrote this fantastic story, which ended up having fantastic allegory anyway.
Yeah, and they're great. And I, my wife and I, we have, of course, the box set with the extended versions. And a couple of times we have sat down and done a marathon and watched the entire thing from start to finish. And I'm just telling you, that's a lot of popcorn.
Well, that, of course, is the best part of a movie is the popcorn. So.
Well, I can't watch a film without popcorn. If I go to the theater.
I can't either. And sometimes too much of that movie popcorn makes me sick, but I'll still buy that box the next time I go.
It's because of the subliminal advertising they did in the 60s.
That's right. Yeah, half the time that's not even real butter. I heard it's something like melted whale lard put on that.
Yeah, it is not. But if you're going to use it, do it layered.
Well, I like the fact that you can kind of get your own now. I'll always get a box and then pour half in, layer it with butter, then put more on. This is making me want to run to the movies right now, Jim. It's too bad you don't live in San Diego. We could go see some films together.
You know, we need to do that next time. And I apologize. I've been in and out of town a couple of times, and we've had stuff. You know, my mother passed away last year, and so it's been business stuff and everything. But next time I can go out there and just have some time to goof around.
Yeah.
We need to find a film worth watching and spending. You know, it's like the commercial.
And I don't think our wives have met each other. Dana's met you, but I don't believe she's met your wife yet, so...
I don't know, but we'll have to make that happen.
Absolutely.
But we need to time it when there's a movie worth spending $75 for the four of us.
Really? And there's nothing that drives me crazier than going to a movie that I wanted to see and then falling asleep in the theater, because then I'm going to go back again, and I'm going to buy popcorn and candy again.
That's what they want.
Well, Jim, my friend, it's always good having you.
This is a lot of fun tonight.
And Nick, let me... give my goodbye to you. You have just been a wonderful board op and a good friend. I've had other good board ops here. They've all done a good job. Nick's been just fantastic.
He
would go beyond the call of duty. If there was a problem at the station, he'd call me on his own time and tell me about it ahead of time. He's been wonderful. So, Nick, I wish you and Lauren all the best in your new endeavors. And for the rest of you, Nick may not be back, but I'll be back. I will see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.